IsraelSin.com.
I'd like to begin here with my friend Miriam Iron Ahuvatel Ohevatel. We already have interviewed her twice. There are two of her programs on the station, two of her CDs. Now we have a third CD. Miriam, tell us about this new CD that's just come out.
This third CD is, a 2 years process. And when I was in the States, somebody heard me singing some of the Hasidic songs that I heard at home. And he said, Miriam, do you have a treasure here? Take it seriously. Take it and make it something out of it. And I did take it seriously. And the truth is that I love those songs. Because every Friday night and every Saturday, we used to sit around the table and sing those songs. And it's like part of my makeup, I would say. So I wanted to dedicate a CD to my father. And that's how... My father's name is Reb Shimshon Eiselman. And our Hebrew name is Iron. My father was born in Jerusalem. He's the fifth generation. And I'm the sixth generation of Hasidic, Karlin. We are the descendant of the Karlin lineage of Hasidism, which started from the Baal Shem Tov, because Arale from Karlin, who is the initiator of this specific lineage, he was among the first students of the Baal Shem Tov, the first circle. And from there came out Chabad, I don't know enough, but I know that Arle Mikarlin was one of his students. Karlin and Stol and two more cities, four cities, it's in White Russia. And those cities probably still exist. And the reason, as usually, the Hasidic lineages are called by the name of the places. So this is called Karlin Stoln or Stoln Karlin. And they have institutes in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, and also in New York.
Do you know why your family came to Palestine?
Well, I assume life was very difficult. And there was a time where there was a movement before pre-Zionism that people don't speak about it. It's called the Aliyah of Ahagra. There was a big rabbi that encouraged it. And it was in the 1846 that my family came, probably after a big pogrom or something. And also, you know, all the prayers are... The Zionism is built in the prayers, so they wanted to come to Israel, I guess.
And they came to Jerusalem?
They came to Jerusalem, and of course some of the family was in Tzfat, and maybe in Tveria too. I think Tveria less, the most Sephardic Jews, but definitely Jerusalem and Tzfat.
And what do you know about their lives here 100 years
Very ago? Difficult, very difficult life. They made the ends meet, you know. I know from my grandmother that was already, you know, a new generation, you know, not as far as back as the Turk time, but still in the Turk time. She has this picture that put the whole thing in a nutshell. They had no work, and Baron Hirsch, you know, which was a big philanthropist, were looking for ways to support the Yeshuva Yashan, the old Yeshuv, how do you say? Community, the old community here. So he made the orchard of almonds in Petah Tikva. And the trees grew, it took time, but eventually they had fruit. So my grandmother, she was 12 years old, where a group of young women and men left on Sunday Jerusalem, walked all day to Petah Tikva, and worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday they already start going back. But there was advantage. They used to sit on a pile of, her work was to peel it. So she said, she remembers herself sitting on a pile of almonds. First of all, there was food. Very important. And then there was some money at the end, and then they came back. And she said that because she had only one pair of shoes, whenever the pavement, the walk was fine, she used to take off the shoes, not to spoil them, so they wouldn't be destroyed. So you can understand from this little story the effort that was demanded to make some money. And also, you know, she had to walk barefoot part of the way. This gives a little bit, but that's like, you know, later on. But the generations before? I know some other stories. For instance, the first family that came happened to be from my mother's side. It was also Carliners. They had a blind child with them. And there was nothing here for blind kids. And they, and with other families, were the first one to build the first house for the blind that is now is very established in Jerusalem, very developed. But they were the first one to start with, from nothing. My family was uptakers, you know. They were they had drug stores. The person that came to Israel from Russia was a medicine man. A pharmacist. It's called in Yiddish an apteker. And later on in my grandfather and my grandfather, they also were milkmen. They used to buy the milk from the Arabs. By the way, it was not cows. It was sheep. And they used to make their own butter and what we called lebania at that time,
yogurt.
And I remember my father was also doing that, you know, that went for a few generations. Eventually, you know, the cooperative Tnuva came, and my father was a revisionist. He was a right wing. And for him to join the cooperative was like, he on my dead body. So,
Miriam, you were telling me about your father, the revisionist, and the world around him was becoming cooperative and left-wing.
Yeah, that was a very difficult time for, in a way, because the ideas of socialism was not part of the old Jewish world. And my father is coming from there. That was very threatening. And it was like mukze, you know. And also it was a political power, new power. It was a whole different way of life. And my father really disassociated himself with it. And also it's very interesting because the school I went, I was also the only girl that was with the right-wing opinions, because I was actually starting my life in Beitar, which was the revisionist youth movement. And all my girlfriends were in Tnua Mouchedet, Ve'ashomer HaTzair, and, you know, left-wing, definitely. And also, there was one girl that was even a communist in my class. And we became friends because she was also an extremist on the other side that the girls didn't want to associate with her. So the two of us became good friends. It's funny. But you know, I learned in Beitar and in my youth to be an individual and to carry common point views, to be a minority. And I think it gave me also the strength to be who I am, which I'm also today carrying, you know, a kind of advanced kind of thinking that is different. You know, I learned to be an individual.
Can you tell us some more stories about the six generations of your family here in Jerusalem?
Well, it's interesting to see what happened to the family. My father is, there were about seven or eight boys and girls in the house. Some of the cousins are not religious at all. Some of the cousins are like, I would say, with the kippah, you know, like Bnei Akiva kind of, more modern religion. religious, but very open and very creative. And but the, it's the interesting thing about the family that one of the my father's sisters was put away in an institute because she, you know, mentally was not okay somehow, got weakened, and the, all her children, she had about five children, were put in an orphan house of Me'ah Sha'arim, you know, very very religious, and all of them got married to Hasidic men. And they really carry like more the spirit of where I'm coming from. The interesting thing is they're very nice, very friendly, and they're inviting all the rest of the cousins to their events, and also they always come to all the weddings. They really want to keep the connection. And one of them is even a chazan. So now my father, you see, my father, we moved out of north of Jerusalem, which is more the religious part, into the city, but he continued to go in the holidays to the Karline by walk, by foot, to the Karline Shul, and I have a picture that on Simchat Torah, you know. They're really great times there in Hoshana Rabbah. It's when they great dancing, you know. It's really amazing. If you Simchat Bet HaShoeva, you know this. If you want to see a real Simcha, go to see the Simcha of Bet HaShoeva, but in Karlin Shul. It's known all over Israel that they are really great singers and dancers and passionate. So my father used to go, and they used to put him. So I have this picture. I and my mother in Ezrat Nashim, and it's usually high and top, the woman section, and my father with many, 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 you know, people. But I can men, of course, I can pinpoint that he was given a shtreimel and a talit, and he is dancing. And he's really getting into ecstasy. Now, my mother is very different than my father. She is kind of more, you know, reserved. And I look at her, and she's kind of judgmental type, you know. And she said, he's making a joke out of himself. Something like Michal and David, you know, King David, when he danced and she was judging. My mother was kind of this type. And I look at her and I look at him and I look at him, her and I look at him, and I'm about 4 or 5 years old, and I say to myself, gee, I don't understand what she wants from me. He seems to have a hell of a good time. And I was also called Tatunio Midibeinir, which means you are your father and his bones. You are like your father, in other words, which was not positive. Now, it took me years to realize that it's true. And it's great. It's great. I really got his spirit. I like to dance. I like to sing. And he probably was, if he would have better conditions, he might also do something with his creativity, natural creativity, and expressiveness. He was very expressive and emotional. So I just took that, you know, received that from him. And I also got from my mother her logic, and I'm a little bit more balanced, and I got the good from both worlds. I know that the life was hard. I know that my grandparents, they lived in Bet Israel. Bet Israel is really part of Me'ah Sha'arim, you know, it's one of those sections of the very, very religious Jews. And I know that the women had a hard time there, you know, child after a child every year, and very little support. I don't know how she managed my grandmother, Guta Ganeshe. I don't know. She was like an angel, but she had to deal with, you know. And also, you know, they had nothing. Like, I remember my father said that if my mother wanted to give him a treat, she used to take a piece of bread and put sugar on it. The fact that it was sweet, that was like good, you know, that was the candy. So this is, you know, they manage somehow to do, but with very little. And even if there was money, the man, the you know, household was holding it. The situation of the women was not simple. I don't know, I think my father and his brothers got very little support. And that's another reason I appreciate to what he managed to do with so little support and tools how to live. And the joy, you know, and there is, I have another story that I think was so nice. The way I finished my life, was the farewell with my father. He was already in the hospital. We didn't know how long he would live, you know. But I came to replace my mother. She used to sit with him day and night in the hospital. So she went to rest and I sat with him and he was very depressed. So I looked at him and my mind is working. How can I help him? What can I do? And I said, Reb Shimshon, you like to sing, right? Come, let's sing. So he didn't answer. You know, he was like, you know, very depressed. So I start singing. And I start singing the songs, you know, that I did this CD, one of them, you know, and then another one. And slowly, slowly, it was amazing. He raised his head and he started crying. That was the first thing. He was crying. Never saw my father crying before in my whole life. I'm singing and he's crying. I'm singing and I'm crying. At the end of the second or third song, all of a sudden you should see his body language change. And he started talking to me. I mean, it was such a transformation for him that I don't know what it was, an acknowledgement or the fact that he heard those songs that he loved himself. But although he didn't, maybe he sang it the third song, but I could see that the man went through a transformation. And I realized how important was the songs for him and also for me. And the next day he died.
Can you tell us about how it came to be that you stepped out of that world? It must be, most people don't do that.
Well, first of all, as I said, I had my mother. She was the window to the big world. She was a person that read those magazines in English. She went to a school, an English school, of a woman named Miss Landau. That she was a British woman that built a school. It was where Misrad HaChinuch in... Well, first it was in the old city, and then it moved into Musrara, where Misrad HaChinuch is. Anyway, it was only for girls, and because her mother, my grandmother, was a widow, she could choose to send the girls to a place she thinks is proper. Because if my mother would stay with a regular family, with her father and mother, she probably will not go to study at all. Or maybe to a very, very religious school. But my grandmother sent her three daughters to Miss Landau, which turned out to be Evelina de Rothschild afterwards. So my mother studied English, and he studied mathematics, and his geography, and also religious. Yeah, and she became very, in a way, very aristocratic. And the women that studied with her were the women that actually were the, how would I say, maskirot, when you say, yeah, they were the high secretaries that helped to transfer the British mandate to Israel because they knew English. So all her girlfriends were like very high, important figures now. She married to my father that was very traditional and he didn't let her work. But potentially she had a Oxford English, and my mother read a Reader Digest every, you know, part time she had, free time she had. And I heard those stories, you know.
Was her marriage an arranged marriage?
No, no. Actually, my father fell in love with me and never let her go. You know, that's it. He was really after her. My father was crazy about my mother, and he was jealous that somebody will one day take her away from him. Yeah.
How old were you when you left the religious world?
So what happened was that I first of all, I was my brother was sent to a cheder, and after a year, my mother knew it's she doesn't want it. She didn't like the style, so she sent him to a school, a public school, but only for boys, Tachkimoni, which was very traditional school, but not religious. Now, I was sent to the parallel school like that for only girls, Lemel. It was a public school and only girls, so it was kind of traditional. And there, you know, I was opened up to a public school education. So that was already put me... But all my girlfriends, they were all traditional homes. They all, more or less, but there were some more socialist and less, but, you know, Sephardi girls.
Were there socialists among the religious community?
No.
So these were secular?
No, there was only... There is one lineage which is called the Poalei Tzion, which is socialist religious, and they have some kibbutzim. This is a whole different branch. We're talking about regular, simple people. They are mostly traditional, politically a little bit, or a little bit socialist, or a little bit right-wing. It was a mixture. So when I grew up, I started talking about the fact that I want to be an actress, and that was a no-no. And my father said, "What?" And in Yiddish, it was like, "A spielerke is a tchatchkele." What do you mean? An actress is a loose girl. But it's negative. It's almost saying it's a whore. Now, when I heard that, I was really like, wow, can't believe it. How am I going to get out of that? Because in school, I already was, you know, expressing myself. And that was like my dream. I wanted to be an actress. And I was thinking about it. And then I came back with an idea. I came to my mother and I said, tell Abba, that if he doesn't want me to end up like his sister Rochel, let him give me a permission to do what I want to do. And after that, there was silence. And the only thing my mother said, why don't you get yourself more first a profession? And then you do what you want. And I bought it, and I went to a teaching college first. And after I finished that, I went off. Oh, no, 1 year I made money from teaching batik, you know, because I was also in that direction creative. And I collected money and I went to the States.
And what was your aunt Rochel like? What did she do?
Rochel, she was married to this Holocaust survivor that was probably a little bit cruel on her. She was a nice woman, but she, with the years, I don't know, she had many children, one after the other, no support. The mother died.
So when you threatened your father to become like Rachel, what was it?
I told you, this was the woman that went into, she was locked up. Yeah, she became unbalanced and she was institutionalized. And I said to him, if you don't want me to be like your... Sister Rochel, let me do what I want to do. And I tell you, I was wise enough to say the truth, because I believe that if I would not go into theater, I could be probably wouldn't know what to do with my rich soul, this energy, you know, extra energy that actors and performers have. And I could go banana. And I'm still dealing with, you know, balancing myself. I think I'm doing quite well.
All right, Miriam, I think we will have to do the music and the music interview as a second program. Thank you very much for telling us a little bit about your life and your family and about our history here. And with that, we'll end this program. So, listeners, tune in again soon, and we will listen to Miriam talking about her music, and then we'll listen to her music. Thank you very much.